It's Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret today, and you're with us on the Ideas Network. Coming up, national election results and the latest on the battle for control of the U.S. House and Senate. But first, we have winners in Wisconsin's two big statewide elections. Voters reelected Democrat Tony Evers to serve his second term as governor, and they chose incumbent Republican Senator Ron Johnson to serve his third term. We're going to get into these and more of the state's election results, including the extremely close down ballot contests, and you can join us at any time at 1-800-642-1234. If you voted at the polls yesterday or worked at the polls, what was your election experience like? Good, bad, otherwise? What do you think about the results we've seen so far? Happy with the outcomes? Unhappy? Is it a mixed bag for you? What about coverage of election last night? What did you watch or listen to, and what did you think? Love to hear your reviews of how you think the news media did. Call us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. You can post on the Ideas Network Facebook page or email us anytime, ideas@wpr.org. Joining us, our guest, Lily Gorin, professor of political science at Carroll University in Waukesha. Lily, welcome back to Central Time.
Thanks for having me on this afternoon.
You bet. And Tim Dale is a political professor, political science and public administration at UW-La Crosse. Tim, welcome back to you as well.
Thanks for having me.
And let's start with the governor's race. Lily, here's a clip of current and future Governor Tony Evers last night speaking to supporters in Madison after midnight.
I'm Tony Evers, and I'm incredibly proud to be the 46th governor of the state of Wisconsin. And I'm jazzed as hell to tell you that on January 3rd, 2023, I will still be the 46th governor.
Lily, what was it that stood out to you about the results in this race last night?
Well, again, we've been sort of looking at this across the board in terms of ticket splitting and the fact that Governor Evers got reelected and Ron Johnson got reelected, which is not necessarily what one might expect. And we also had seen this in the past with regard to sort of Walker Obama voters, I believe, and Baldwin Walker supporters in the past. So Wisconsinites are a little, you know, mavericky sometimes.
And Tim Dale, let's bring up the other Tim, Republican challenger Tim Michaels. We know that he called Evers to concede, and it wouldn't normally make a point of saying as such, but we are today. Why is this significant?
Well, it's significant because I think that there were Republicans across the country, as we've heard for 2 years, with deep suspicions about our election systems. And I think one of the things that was tested nationwide was whether that argument was going to be persuasive to win elections. And I think by all accounts, historically, the Republicans did not do as well as we've seen typically in a midterm election in a president's first term in office. And so I would predict that we would see more of that maybe going forward is really a desire to move forward, because I don't know that it's a winning strategy to claim that all elections are bad elections.
Michaels appeared to lose some ground in the traditional Republican wall of the so-called wow counties, which were brought up in the national media last night time and again. That would be Waukesha, Ozaukee, and Washington counties around the suburbs of Milwaukee. And I'd be interested in knowing what both of you think of this, but I'll start with you, Lily. You teach in Waukesha at Carroll College. What about the GOP support of the wow counties and whether or not we're seeing a shift there?
Well, again, in the past, Ron Johnson had sort of relied on the wow counties as a sort of foundation of his election campaign. And the expectation, if one's going to win as a Republican in Wisconsin, you do have to run up the vote there. And there is definitely a difference in terms of the vote numbers that Johnson got there versus Michaels. And I said this 6 years ago that, you know, Johnson ran ahead of Trump in Wisconsin. And I think you see this again with regard to Johnson having run ahead of Michaels in Wisconsin, but particularly in the wow counties.
Yeah. And Tim Dale, what do you think of the wow counties and the Republican support there and whether or not it's eroding?
Yeah. And I think that elections like this, it's sometimes difficult if we're looking at overall trends or just something that happened in this particular election. And Lily might have more to say about this in terms of what she's seeing on the front lines. But I really think that the well, at least the exit polls that, I'm seeing are showing that abortion was an issue on a lot of people's minds, particularly in state races. And I think if we did have split ticket voters, there is going to be some reason why people were comfortable voting for Ron Johnson for the Senate and Evers for governor. And I think that the counties around Milwaukee may be the kinds of places where you have people willing to split their ticket when a big issue comes up like this. I think overall, an explanation for why we saw what we saw, even though Wisconsin voters are notoriously willing to split their ticket.
Can I just add something to that? I did want to add this in terms of the discussion of, you know, not only the split ticket voting, but also in terms of the appeal of Ron Johnson, who, again, was running for a third term in the Senate, fairly well known, particularly among Republicans in the state, and Tim Michaels, who was less well known, who had a very contentious primary fight with Rebecca Clayfish, who's also very well known among Republicans in the state, as well as Wisconsinites in general. And I have a feeling that that may have been part of the issue with regard to Michaels's loss. Not as well known, perhaps not as well liked as Ron Johnson or even Rebecca Clayfish in the primary.
Lily Gorin, our guest, professor of political science at Carroll University. Also, Tim Dale joining us, professor of political science and public administration at UW-La Crosse. And we invite you to our conversation as well as we review the results from last night's election here in Wisconsin. Join us at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. And the AP didn't declare for Senator Johnson until around midday today. Here's some of Senator Johnson speaking to supporters last night.
You know, I do believe that this time truth has prevailed over the lies, over the character assassination. But I will say, unfortunately, it's still so close. And that's a little depressing, isn't it? That lies can be that effective.
What about this general election between Senator Johnson and Lieutenant Governor Mandela Barnes and the character assassination, as Senator Johnson called it? Tim Dale, what did you see as this campaign rolled through Wisconsin?
Well, I think that we're kind of used to negative campaigning. So I guess I wouldn't call this particular race any more or less negative than what we see in other races. It got very heated. The candidates had a lot of things to say about the other. And I think that I was not surprised by what we saw. The other thing that was happening, and I think we saw this dynamic in both races, is that in both the governor and the Senate race, we saw the incumbent win. And there is a clear incumbency advantage, even if it's only a couple of points. And I think Lily put it before that voters know the candidate who is in office. And so what Ron Johnson is responding to there obviously was attacks, but I don't think we should be surprised when we see attacks in a political campaign. And certainly Johnson was responsible for those as well.
Yeah, and Senator Johnson said again on the Dan O'Donnell show on WISN AM this morning that he was surprised that the vote was as close as it was with Mandela Barnes. So, Lily, what's behind the power or the strength of the incumbency for candidates in Wisconsin?
Well, I mean, in Wisconsin and nationally, there's a lot of literature, political science literature, on the strength of incumbency because, in fact, voters are familiar with you. And they to some degree, know you as a candidate, as an elected office holder. And I think you saw that in both Ron Johnson's case and in Tony Evers' case, is that they didn't necessarily redefine themselves. They sort of, you know, to some degree spoke to how voters understood them to be, whereas Mandela Barnes, who had in fact won statewide race as lieutenant governor, which is perhaps a less visible and maybe important job in a lot of ways, perhaps. I don't want to undercut it, but they didn't know him as well. And the same thing with regard to Tim Michaels, who had run statewide in Wisconsin before, but not successfully. And so both of those challenger candidates had to define themselves, and voters had to evaluate whether they found them attractive, likable. And sometimes, you know, I'm not sort of saying this about any candidate in particular, but voters often think sometimes The Devil You Know versus The Devil You Don't Know.
Lily Gorin, professor of political science at Carroll University. Also joining us, Tim Dale, professor of political science and public administration at UW-La Crosse. We have calls coming in, and we'll get to them momentarily at 1-800-642-1234, but there is room for your reaction as well. What do you think of the results last night in Wisconsin and the split-ticket voting of re-electing both Democratic Governor Tony Evers to his second term and Republican Senator Ron Johnson to his third term? We'll get your reaction and our guests when we continue on Central Time. You're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret. And right now we're picking up the conversation looking at the results of Wisconsin's midterm elections. Our guests are Lily Gorin, political science professor from Carroll University, and Tim Dale, professor of political science and public administration at UW-La Crosse. We're going to you now at 1-800-642-1234, getting your reactions from the results last night and inviting you to join our conversation and ask our experts your questions at 1-800-642-1234. Or you can email us ideas@wpr.org. Let's go to Pat in Three Lakes. Pat, you're on the air with Lily Gorin and Tim Dale.
Yeah, well, thank you very much for taking my call. On the Senate race in Wisconsin, one of the guests said that Johnson was likable or was well liked. I'm an independent. I vote split ticket. Johnson's not well liked by too many people. If Alex Lazary would have run, Johnson would have been beat by 10 points.
Why do you think that is, Pat?
And, one of the reasons is because Alex Lazary is married with a family and a businessman. The people in rural, and that's where we're at, the people in the rural areas of Wisconsin would have voted for him over Johnson, even the Republicans. I know a lot of Republicans. And we were looking for somebody besides Johnson. And Mandela Barnes didn't have the timber. We just, you know, not that he couldn't have eventually, but he didn't have it. And I honestly think that we were looking for a businessman, a family man, somebody that had been successful in the private industry. And I think, and I know, just by talking to a lot of people, some diehard Republicans, they would have won 100% for Lazary because they really don't like Johnson that much.
Why didn't they go for Mandela Barnes?
I don't think they didn't think he had the president or the senatorial timber.
Do you see race playing a role in this, Pat?
I think it did in some areas and in some situations, some parts of the state. I'm sure it did. I think it played a fairly big. It's got to the point where black people can get elected if they really have it. They have to have a little bit more than their white counterpart. But Mandela could be that person because he seems to be a nice person. He doesn't have it now.
Pat, and I very much Lazary, appreciate the perspective from Three Lakes. I want to get some more perspective in before we go back to our guest. Let's go to John in Appleton. John, good afternoon. You're on Central Time.
Yeah, thank you, and thanks to everybody for all you do. Are we for sure on the results of the Johnson-Barnes race? I mean, what we're relying on now is just the AP calling. When will the official results come out, and could they be different? And I'll give you my thoughts about Mandela if you want them later.
Well, let's go to our guest first. Lily, are these results finalized? Is this the way we're going to end up when every ballot's counted?
Well, I mean, again, we are seeing in some of the down ballot races that there may be a call for a recount. I don't know that I've heard anything. Obviously, Mandela Barnes conceded to Ron Johnson earlier today, I believe it was. And so I don't see him pursuing a recount, but I haven't heard definitively.
Tim Dale, let me ask you about Pat's question about Lieutenant Governor Barnes not having the timber in certain parts of Wisconsin to be a U.S. senator. And, you know, the contention in that campaign. NPR had questions about Barnes' opposition to cash bail, the priorities of crime in the state of Wisconsin. How many of these facets played into the outcome, especially in rural parts of Wisconsin?
Yeah, and I think that those are really good questions. The elections are usually more complex than just a single issue or a single set of concerns from the voters. One of the things I think the caller mentioned was in terms of whether or not someone else might have been successful in the race. Another factor I want to point out that hasn't been mentioned yet is that in both cases, we have voters doing something that's fairly typical, which is voting for divided government. In voting for Ron Johnson, we have Biden in the presidency. Voters are sending to Washington a Republican, which is something that we typically see with a opposition party in power. In the state, it's the opposite. We have a Republican legislature and a vote for Evers. And so I think that there are dynamics beyond even the candidates that we see. And I'm not sure that another Democrat may have fared differently when you have essentially a Republican candidate running in a race where people say, I would like to see a Republican in Washington. I'd like to see a Democrat in the state.
There's also bringing up the issue of split ticket voting in Wisconsin. Governor Evers' margin of victory exceeded that of Attorney General and incumbent Democrat Josh Call, who narrowly defeated Republican challenger Eric Toney. And it exceeds the Secretary of State with incumbent Democrat Doug La Follette leading at this point very in the narrowest of margins, Republican challenger Amy Loudenbeck. And then we have a new state treasurer. Republican John Lieber will be replacing Sarah Godlewski, who was running for in the primary for that Senate seat, and he narrowly defeats Democrat Aaron Richardson for treasurer. So as you look at those down ticket races, Lily Gorin, what do you see there?
I mean, I think that Tim's point about the kind of splitting up with regard to the divisions of power, not only in the executive branch, but also in the legislature, where Wisconsinites did not give the Republicans a veto-proof majority in the legislature. So what we do have is we'll probably have a continuation of gridlock. And this is interesting compared to some of our neighboring states where there was a sort of an accumulation towards one party in Minnesota and in Michigan, if I'm looking at the data correctly. And so Wisconsin will remain in this kind of divided government situation.
In the U.S. House, we saw a flip in the 3rd District, which was held by Democrat Ron Kind for decades. He has stepped aside and retired. Republican Derek Van Orden defeated Democrat Brad Pfaff, and that is the only really contentious House election that we had yesterday in all 8 House seats across the state of Wisconsin. So what do we make of these outcomes across the board, Tim Dale?
Yeah, well, I'm sitting over here in the 3rd Congressional District, so I had a front row seat for that race. So much money poured in from outside of Wisconsin to that race. And actually, Pfaff was a little disappointed that some money was pulled at the last minute. But I think that we saw that race kind of on the front lines of the effort to take back the House and then to build up some advantage. With Ron Kind stepping down, it certainly was an open seat. And Van Orden was well-known in the district, had run before. Pfaff as the challenger certainly put up a good fight, but we had an open seat. And as often happens, and I think the seat probably is going to go down in the column of a win for whatever slight wave there was. This is a district that probably would normally be voting Democrat, where the way the district lines have been drawn. And so what we saw was a lot of money pouring in, knowing that this was the kind of seat that Republicans could pick up. And it definitely was contentious, as you said.
Yeah, so you'd expect potentially even more money in just a few more years, because as I look down the list here in the second congressional district, Mark Pocan was reelected by more than 40%. In Milwaukee area, Gwen Moore was reelected by more than 50%. Scott Fitzgerald was reelected to his second term by about 30 percentage points. And Glenn Grothman was uncontested. Tom Tiffany was reelected by more than 20%, and Mike Gallagher was reelected by more than 50%. So does this leave us with only one contested congressional district as we look towards 2024, Lily?
I would say so. I mean, the districts in Wisconsin have been drawn fairly safely. And to some degree, they are also representative of potentially an imbalance in terms of representation of voices in Wisconsin, given the sort of 50-50 nature of our election outcomes, but the skew with regard to how many seats are held by Republicans and how many by Democrats.
Lily Gorin, I wanted to ask you about some late-breaking legal challenges, in particular a Waukesha Circuit Court hearing over handling of military ballots, and some concerns about whether whether ballots would be counted or whether the election was secure. What did you see there?
I mean, I saw the information about the lawsuit, and then I saw also that it was, you know, it was stayed so that it didn't come to fruition. But again, you've seen a lot of these challenges with regard to voters in particular ways that they vote, be they military voters or people who are voting by mail, and challenges to whether or not these mechanisms for voting are legitimate, which seems to be the case more often than not coming from Republican challenges, but not exclusively.
Tim Dale, what other takeaways do you have from yesterday's Wisconsin midterms?
Well, I think basically what we've been talking about, that I think people are voting for divided government, and they're essentially saying that they're not particularly happy with either party right now. And I think that we also see kind of a lack of a national narrative from either party. And so what we're going to be watching, I think, going forward is what kind of arguments emerge and what kind of cohesion we might see in terms of solution-oriented discussions. So I'm looking forward to the next couple of years to see how this might shape what we're already going to be talking about probably within the next week, which is election 2024.
Yes. We've already talked about
it. Never stops.
Tim Dale, Lily Gorin, thank you both so much for joining us this afternoon.
Always a pleasure.
Thanks for having me.
Lily Gorin is professor of political science at Carroll University in Waukesha. Tim, sorry to cut you off. Tim Dale, professor of political science and public administration at UW La Crosse. And that cut you off because I want to let you know we're continuing our conversation about the election outcomes from yesterday, and we're expanding our focus beyond the state of Wisconsin, but still taking a look at its impact in our state to the national election results, election security and questions about the election, and what it portends for the future of our country and our own backyard. Would also be interested to hearing from you. Sorry we didn't get to all those calls that half hour, but there is more to come on the outcome of yesterday's elections and what that means for us going forward. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret today, and you're listening to Central Time on the Ideas Network. This is Central Time. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret. And coming up, heating bills are going to go up this winter, and we'll learn more about weatherization programs that can help make your home more energy efficient and help you keep your costs down. Now, control of Congress is still up in the air as the midterm election results continue to come in. Republicans are seeing some gains in the House races and are expected to take back control of that chamber, but the margin is still in question. The Senate is still up for grabs. Results are still coming in for races in Arizona and Nevada, and Georgia's Senate race will be heading to a runoff election on December 6th. Here in Wisconsin, as you heard in the news, Senator Ron Johnson's been reelected over Democrat Mandela Barnes, as the AP called that race earlier today. We want to hear what you think at 1-800-642-1234. That's 800-642-1234. What do you think about the Senate races in Wisconsin and across the board? What implications do you think a Republican-controlled Congress will have in the U.S.? And what about a Democratic one, for that matter? And what are you watching for as the counts continue? 800-642-1234. Email us anytime, ideas@WPR.org. Our guest, Kathleen Dolan, is a distinguished professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Kathleen, welcome back to Central Time.
Thank you.
Also joining us, Jonah Ralston, an associate professor of political science at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. Jonah, thanks for joining us again.
Yes, thanks for having me.
And Kathleen Dolan, I'll begin with you. Republicans works. I saw the red wave, the red tsunami, Politico and New York Times, Wall Street Journal, Washington Post, almost across the board. The expectations were it was going to be the Republicans' night. And while they still may take control of the U.S. House, they fell short of what were across the board expectations. What happened?
Well, a couple of things happened. Certainly the kind of media hyperbole often goes into overdrive, and a lot of pundits, you know, focused on the historical expectations that we had that a president's party loses seats in a midterm. They also looked at all of the headwinds that were facing President Biden and the Democrats, inflation and other, you know, sort of very close pocketbook issues about which people care. And they ignored some of the things that might have had them temper their expectations. So there certainly was some evidence that yesterday people were embracing perhaps the notion that they may not have been wildly happy about the last couple of years, but that the last couple of years have been more stable and predictable, perhaps, and our politics has been less all over the place than it used to be, and maybe people were voting for a little bit of sort of stability.
Jono Ralston, were you as surprised as some of the pundits in the outcome from last night?
Well, I think one thing that that was missing, you know, there was a big focus on inflation, and it was the top concern, at least from what the exit polls showed. But that second concern was abortion. And I think that it got overlooked, that that was such a motivating factor for many Democratic voters. And so there was a lot of upset over the Roe v. Wade decision, you know, that being overturned. And so I think that played a pretty important role in boosting Democratic turnout. And then, you know, it was more of a red trickle than a red wave.
So there was inflation, but on the other side, there was reproductive rights. But there was also the case that Republicans made about crime. And there was the case that Democrats made about a representative republic and the threats to democracy. Did any of those issues resonate yesterday with the voters, Kathy?
Sure. You know, I mean, you know, the thing about elections is that they are multifaceted and multi-moving part events. So crime motivated some people, abortion motivated others, inflation probably motivated a lot of people. You know, there isn't one explanation. So there are certainly, I would agree with Jonah that abortion was not, you know, the pundits had decided that the interest people had in abortion and reacting to the Dobbs decision crested and was gone, and with perhaps little evidence of that. And there are cases like here in Wisconsin where political campaigns tried to suggest that crime was a big problem. That appealed to some people. Other people didn't buy it.
That's Kathy Dolan, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Also joining us, Jono Ralston, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. And before the news, we'd been talking about the split ticket in Wisconsin where Governor Evers, the Democrats, reelected to his second term, and Senator Johnson, a Republican, reelected to his third term. But that's not all the split ticket voting we saw yesterday. We saw the same similar scenarios play out in Ohio, Georgia, and New Hampshire. Jonah, what is the entrenched partisanship that we've become so familiar with? Is that defied by the outcome of the election yesterday to some degree? Do voters not see or are willing to defy the partisanship that seems to have been so entrenched?
Well, yes and no. I mean, there's certainly been a decline in split ticket voting if you look at historical trends since, you know, the 80s, that there was a high point of split ticket voting, and it's been in decline since then. So polarization and the intense partisanship we're experiencing these days certainly does reduce split ticket voting. But I think you're right that, you know, it's not gone completely. And so certainly we saw this in the Wisconsin race where you had the Democratic challenger in the Senate race losing, but you had the Democratic incumbent governor winning. And like you had mentioned, you know, this scenario played out in a few other states as well, like Georgia. And it appears that in Arizona, the Democratic senatorial candidate is running ahead of what's happening in the governor's race. So yeah, we do still have these split ticket voters. You know, they're kind of like unicorns. They're hard to find, but they are there.
Well, and they did make a difference yesterday. Go ahead, Kathy.
I was going to say, I also think that people separate the offices in their mind at some level, right? I mean, they were voting for a governor and a U.S. senator yesterday, and both of those people here in Wisconsin were incumbents. And Mark Kelly in Arizona, who is running ahead of the Democratic gubernatorial candidate there, is an incumbent. And so it's always a challenge to beat incumbents, even in a year like this, where you could say, you know, that, you know, Senator John Johnson was considered to be the most imperiled incumbent, Republican incumbent in the Senate. But it's always an uphill climb to vote against an incumbent. And I think if you look at the just the raw vote totals that we saw yesterday in Wisconsin, there's something more going on there. You know, there were more Democratic votes for statewide office for governor and for attorney general than there were received by Lieutenant Governor Barnes in his Senate race. So, again, as I said, there are many dynamics at play.
One of the other dynamics, Kathy, was brought up last night in some of the election coverage was the quality of the candidates themselves and not just the party. Do the people still matter in this partisanship as you see it?
Absolutely. I think that we would be having a much different conversation today if the Republican Party had more control over who its candidates were, particularly in a couple of those Senate races. I, you know, talk with my class all the time about candidate quality and the Herschel Walker in Georgia and Mehmet Oz in Pennsylvania, you know, stand as missed opportunities for the Republican Party from a candidate quality perspective. So absolutely, people look at the party, but there are always going to be people who, you know, have to look at the candidate themselves and feel like they're investing their vote in somebody worth investing.
Jonah Ralston, what about the Democratic strategy of financially supporting some of the more extreme Republicans in their primaries? Was that effective? What was your takeaway of that?
Well, yeah, certainly it was an interesting strategy. Well, you know, in some cases, it seems to have, you know, done well for them in terms of a strategy. But again, to Kathy's point, I mean, the bigger issue here is that really the quality of the Democratic candidate matters too, right? And so you need to have somebody who's going to be able to be competitive in those races. So even if you get the Republican you want to run against, you better have a pretty good candidate to put forward, right?
Well, and the interesting thing that you bring up about the Democratic strategy of financing or, you know, sending money into races and trying to help the most extreme Republican candidate, every single one of those Republican candidates lost yesterday. So there were lots of people who were critical of the Democratic strategy to do that. But at least in this one situation, it worked, in part perhaps because of the extremity of the Republican candidate. But as Jonah said, they made sure that they had good Democrats running against them.
So with that in mind, Kathy, is there anything we can glean from the results yesterday about which type of Republican or Democratic candidates would be successful going forward?
Well, it's way too early to take any lessons. And, you know, the problem with elections, just like with campaigns, I mean, we like to tell stories that we think make sense about why things happened the way they did. And we never know for sure, again, multifaceted elections. But I will be interested. I won't say this is going to happen, but I will be interested to see as we move away from the election in time and we get all of these final results, whether Republicans come to some sense that it is time to put distance between themselves and Donald Trump, because many of the relatively low quality candidates who didn't fare well yesterday or who, you know, in the case of Herschel Walker are still running, they were endorsed by the former president. And so you've started to hear strategists today talk a little bit about how this is yet one more sign that the Republicans need to move away from Donald Trump, and I'll be interested to see if it happens.
Kathleen Dolan, political science professor at UWM, and Jonah Ralston joining us, associate professor of political science at UW-Whitewater. Taking a look at the midterm election, the results, and the continued up-in-the-air control of Congress. And want to hear from you at 1-800-642-1234. What do you think about the midterm election results so far? Any confusion you have about when it comes to the Senate outcomes or who's going to control the House? And did you anticipate a red wave? 800-642-1234 or email us at ideas@WPR.org. Our conversation continues coming up on Central Time. This is Central Time on the Ideas Network. I'm Lee Rayburn in for Rob Ferret today, and we're picking up our talk with UW-Whitewater Associate Professor of Political Science Jonah Ralston and UW-Milwaukee Professor of Political Science Kathleen Dolan. They're both joining us today to talk about the control of Congress in the Wisconsin Senate race, and we want to hear from you before we're done with this hour at 1-800-642-1234. What are you worried about or excited about after the re-election of Ron Johnson, and what are you anticipating will change in the U.S. with new congressional leadership? 800-642-1234, expected new congressional leadership, I should say. And I also want to ask both of our guests about the costs of these races. Some estimates have it approaching $17 billion for the election, and some of the turnouts that we're seeing from these elections. Can you afford to run a race anymore with a $17 billion price tag across the board at some estimates, Kathleen Dolan?
Well, you know, one of the really sort of problematic pieces, like in political science, we have a joke and we say that half of the campaign spending in any election is wasted. The problem is we just don't know which half. And we really, you know, for as sophisticated as our ability to analyze elections might be, we really don't have great data on what moves people in a determinative way that would justify this investment. But think about Wisconsin, right? Because it's ground zero for so much of this over the last several election cycles. So much money spent here. And turnout in the state was flat. I mean, it was a complete flat line. It was no different from 2018. So we don't know what people are getting and buying. I mean, did ads, you know, convince people? Probably yes, around the margins in some cases. But there's an enormous amount of money spent and a lot of ads, you know, that are untruthful or negative, and people claim they don't like them. We know that negative ads work, but I mean, so much money being spent, it's just ridiculous.
Right. But isn't some of that money at some level intended to suppress the vote or get people to keep people who would normally support a candidate from actually casting a ballot for them, Jonah?
Well, I think some of the money that's best spent is the money spent on actually getting out the vote, not on stymieing any votes. So really what you want to spend money on, right, is trying to get volunteers to, you know, make calls, to, you know, get transportation for people to get to the polls. You know, that's where you're going to have really a major impact because you're enhancing your base's turnout. I'm not sure how, like, you know, Kathy said, it's really unclear in the literature how effective a lot of these advertisements are. I mean, I think we've all experienced it, right? You in the same day, you get a pro and a negative mailer. You know, is that really motivating anyone to go out and vote differently?
Let's go to your calls now at 1-800-642-1234. We're Jennifer in Milwaukee standing by. Jennifer, you're on the air with Kathy Dolan and Jonah Ralston.
Hi, I'm calling because I'd like to bring up the point about the primaries, the Democratic primaries. You know, right before the primaries were held, a couple days before they were supposed to be held, the Marquette University poll showed Lazry and Mandela Barnes pretty equal in terms of projected votes. And then a couple of days before the primary was supposed to happen, Lazry just miraculously or surprisingly dropped out. And so I felt, as a Democratic voter, that the Democratic Party of Wisconsin chose our candidate for us in Wisconsin rather than the people being able to go to the polls and actually select the candidate that we wanted for Senate. So I personally, as a Democrat, did not vote at all for the Senate. And I know many other people who didn't either because they were very upset by the Democratic Party making their choice for them. I also wonder if that would account for the discrepancy in the number of Democrats who voted for Governor Evers versus Mandela Barnes in the Senate race.
Jennifer, I very much appreciate your perspective.
Yeah.
And when it comes to quality of candidates, the role that a primary plays in this should not go unnoticed, Kathy.
No. And so I would say a couple of things to Jennifer and as she says, several other Democrats that she knows. I hope that they feel comfortable with the fact that their decision not to vote for the Senate race yesterday probably really contributed to Senator Johnson being reelected. So as Democrats, if they are comfortable with that, then they certainly have the right to make that choice. But the more specific issue about the August primary, the Marquette polls before the August primary had shown Alex Lazary with a decent lead over Lieutenant Governor Barnes. And that last poll before the primary showed that Lieutenant Governor Barnes had caught up to Alex Lazary. And so Alex Lazary made a decision. He may have been encouraged to do so by members of the party, but he made a decision about the amount of money he was going to invest and whether or not he was going to get a return for that dollar. And he dropped out. And part of it was because Ron Johnson was the most imperiled incumbent senator among the Republicans in the country, the Democratic Party here in the state wanted a united front in choosing a candidate. They worried that splitting the vote three ways and having a person emerge with a plurality vote would be a weak candidate, and it would make it less likely that they could defeat Senator Johnson. So, you know, Alex Lazary is a fully grown adult who made a decision for himself, but the decisions that voters made yesterday about their peak at the Republican Party had an impact on the outcome too.
Yeah, and there is a cautionary tale here, right? I mean, if we look at 2016, there's no question that the Democratic Party establishment much preferred to have Hillary Clinton over Bernie Sanders. And there is some evidence that there were some disaffected Democratic voters as a result of that who did not cast their ballots for Clinton. And that probably contributed to her loss in 2016. So, you know, this is not a new story, right? This has happened before, right?
Yeah, that's right. And it isn't a new story. But what lesson is not learned by party members is that it can work against them in the end.
Kathy Dolan, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Jonah Ralston, Assistant Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. And I also want to get your take on what's expected to be Republican control of the U.S. House when all is said and done here. And it was announced today that Kevin McCarthy, who was a House Minority Leader, is expected to run for Speaker of the House to lead the Republicans. And what would that mean for the next session of Congress going forward as you see it, Jonah?
That's a great question. I think it's very likely that the Republicans will, in fact, have the House majority. It's looking less likely, right, for the Senate. And so let's assume then that the Senate remains in Democratic hands and that the Republicans take over the House. Well, I think there are three big things you're going to see as a result of that. The first being that they will use their oversight powers. And so you're going to start seeing some scrutiny of these large spending packages that were passed during the Biden presidency, for example. And there's a precedent for this. They did the same thing to Obama's Recovery Act, right? And of course, the Solyndra controversy that erupted out of that. You're going to see the second thing would be a lot of hearings. And some of these will be focused on attacking the president in terms of, say, Hunter Biden and his connections to Ukraine, whatever it might be. But we'll also see some other things, and other issues that will be looked into. And those will be mostly for political theater. And then the third thing I think we can see is that they will absolutely use the power of the purse because, appropriations bills will start in the House. And so they're going to use that as a point of leverage with the Democrats. And I would not be surprised if we see another government shutdown, not unlike what we did see in 2013 when the Republicans had the House and the Democrats had the Senate and the presidency.
And Kathy Dolan, we just have about 60 seconds left, but if the Republicans control the House, what do you see as their agenda going forward?
Well, I think Jonah has given us a good summary of the possibilities. I think the key here is the size of the majority. It's obviously going to be much smaller than they thought it was going to be. And so, say, Speaker McCarthy is elected, his life is going to be no easier than the life of Speaker Paul Ryan, who you and your listeners may remember resigned as speaker because he couldn't take it anymore.
We're out of time here, but I want to thank you both. Kathy Dolan, Distinguished Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Milwaukee. Thank you. Jonah Ralston, Associate Professor of Political Science at the University of Wisconsin-Whitewater. Fascinating, and I thank you both for joining us for this half hour today. Both with us to talk about congressional control in the Senate race in Wisconsin and what impact that might have. Coming up tomorrow on The Morning Show, fallout from the United Nations Climate Change Conference happening now in Egypt. Join Kate Archer-Kent and her guests as they examine the role in the United States is playing and what that might mean here in Wisconsin. Also, Shawamigan-Nicolet National Forest spans more than 1.5 million acres. We'll meet its new leader tomorrow morning after 7 on The Morning Show here on the Ideas Network.